You know, there's a start and a finish, and we just progress there. So we think that he's a mess. Who's ever writing this psalm is a mess in verse 1, but by the time they get to verse 10, they got it figured out. See, that's kind of Western thinking. But in the Middle East, it's a little different. In the Middle East, the idea of holding two contrasting realities, that experientially, this is what it seems like to me. And yet there is another truth I anchor to. And it allows that both realities can be looked at and considered. So I found that people either love the Psalms and they find great comfort and identify and solace in the Psalms, or they generally want to avoid them. You see, because I don't want to feel and think that deeply about that many things. No, I don't really need more of that emotional stuff. So I'm hopeful that this summer you'll learn something about yourself by looking in the mirror of the Psalms. I hope that you'll draw closer to God as we journey through the Psalms together and as we consider that our God invites us with all of who we are, our feelings, our thoughts, our doubts, our apprehensions. He invites us to come to him with it all. And the Psalms give that invitation. There's a book in our library that is just called Psalms, Reading and Studying the Book of Praise. Bellinger writes it. And you might find it helpful. I've drawn on it for some of the thoughts in this sort of introduction to the series. But it might help you appreciate kind of how Hebrew poetry works and the various kinds of psalms, and so that there are other ways of reading what comes before us. The psalm that I've been asked to spend some time with you on this morning is Psalm 90. You might like to turn there. I've titled these thoughts, Time for a Fresh Perspective. Time for a Fresh Perspective. Can you tell, or do others tell you, when you need a fresh perspective? I get a little both. You see, there's some clues when you might need a new perspective. You might notice that you're pretty negative. You might notice that you're full of anger, even at little things that just don't do what I want them to do when I want them to do it. It may feel even hopeless. It may seem like everything's stacked against you and you just can't get it right. You may have the belief you'll never be good enough. What's the point? Why try? I don't know if I can take much more of this. I don't even know if I want to. None of you folks would have any of these sort of thoughts. Or at least if you had them, you wouldn't let them stay very long, would you? I have. Maybe you felt that way recently, in these last few weeks or months. If so, Psalm 90 may be just right for you. You see, because the psalm we're looking at is one of those lament psalms. Something about this kind of a psalm is it acknowledges and addresses itself to God, really, as a prayer, but maybe not as we often think of a prayer. It's kind of like more like a conversation with God where you are at the customer service complaint counter. And you bring your complaint. You said satisfaction guarantee or money cheerfully refunded. So, I'm here. If you recognize that slogan. So it brings the complaint before the Almighty and then makes a petition saying, here's what I'd like you to do to put it right. And then often ends with a sort of, I trust you heard my prayer, and I'm awaiting my refund. This particular psalm perhaps leaves off that last part. Mark Buchanan wrote a book called Spiritual Rhythm. in which he describes the seasons of our soul. And this sort of a season when our perspective turns to this kind of negative, hopeless state, he would call winter. Winter of the soul. The laments give us a way to keep the conversation going even when in our soul we're feeling winter and it seems like winter has no end. And so that we can keep the conversation going without pretending it's all okay. You see, there are times for most of us, if not all of us, when life overwhelms. When we don't know if we have either the reason or the resources to carry on. You see, that is the nature of living by faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. I don't get it. I can't see it. I can't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me. That is the time for faith. Faith isn't about when it's all so clear and I can see where it's all coming. It's all fitting together. That needn't require faith. People of faith are people that are living life in the midst of the challenge of not seeing, of not understanding. Sometimes we're left hanging, not seeing and not understanding. I often have the chance to have conversations with people who are in just that place. And we have the opportunity today to read about a man of God who is in this sort of place, who brings these sorts of requests, complaints to God. And in fact, it is the only psalm that is attributed to Moses. Whether he wrote it himself, he certainly could have. He certainly had the education to do that. He's written a good portion of our Bible. Or whether it was one that was passed down and others put to pen, his life certainly reflects in this psalm. So, Psalm 90, a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Lord, you have been our dwelling place through all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turned people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. 1,000 years is in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. Yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They're like new grass in the morning. In the morning it springs up, but by evening it is dry and withered. We are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. All of our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. Our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures. Yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. If only we knew the power of your anger. Your wrath is as great as the fear that you're due. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Relent, Lord. How long will it be? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for the many days as you have afflicted us, for as many years as we have seen trouble. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. You sense that might not have been a good day for Moses? And he doesn't seem to be just talking about a day, but perhaps a protracted season. Men of God pray like that. I say that to be able to say, this wasn't a sign that he was unspiritual. This was a sign that he was a man who desired relationship and harmony with God. So we're told that Moses, the man of God, this is his prayer. And there's going to be days when this will be the prayer you may have. And you're allowed. In fact, he put it in the book so you could have an example that might help guide how you can pray when you're just fed up and worn out and confused. It didn't just get missed by the editors. It was intentionally placed there so that you could have it to help direct your prayer. And for some of you who life just seems, and maybe even in the season you're in, you just can't identify, that's okay. And enjoy the springtime and the summer that you share and delight in it. But maybe tuck this away to know there may be life events or challenges where this will be important for you to remember. You see, I often have these sorts of conversations in my counseling office with people that are questioning all that life has thrown their way. In fact, as I was preparing this, I was imagining sitting down with Moses and what the counseling session might have sounded like if he came in and wanted to talk about what's life in the wilderness like anyway. And I want to be respectful, not just to Moses, but to you. I don't know what you've gone through. I don't know how it's affected you. I don't know your story unless you share it with me. And then I only understand it in part. But when we can listen to each other, and as God invites us that we can come before him, he listens and he understands. So I imagine, you see, because in the text, it talks about that a man can expect 70, you know, maybe 80 years. And in Moses' life, 80 years was the Exodus. So I'm thinking somewhere leading up to that 80 years, he's kind of saying, is this all there is? Do I go on paying for the mistakes, the rash choices of my youth forever? You see, what do we remember about this Moses? You see, he was raised in the Egyptian court. He had everything. Education, training, opportunity. He was the 1%. And then he has to flee for his life because he allowed his own rage over injustice and harsh treatment to have him kill an Egyptian. And so he's a fugitive on the run, carrying the weight of his crime, the guilt. And for 40 years, he spent time largely in isolation, herding sheep in the wilderness, in the desert. So when he's sitting there in my office and saying, I've had enough of this, when's it going to be any different? Is it ever going to get better? It's not so hard to understand where he might be coming from. So, I also wanted us to look at the first time I was reading through the whole of the passage. I read from New International Version. And now I want to go kind of piece by piece. First, this introduction that addresses God using the message. And if you're not familiar with the message, Eugene Peterson wrote a translation that takes a certain amount of liberty with paraphrase to try to get the heart of the message, but it seemed to fit this poetic form well, so that's what we have on the screen now. First two verses are the introduction portion. God, it seems you've been our home forever. Long before the mountains were born, long before you brought earth itself to birth, from once upon a time to kingdom come. You are God. He starts his prayer acknowledging God as his home. The word there literally is my refuge. You see, for a man who is a fugitive and on the run, a place where he could run for safety. He's lived his life not really feeling that he fits or belongs anywhere. He's a man in many ways without a culture, without a people. And in fact, God is his home. You see, because God is the only one that's been constant. Because God is the same from creation forever. You see, and God is the only one who gets it all. His perspective, God's perspective, sees the whole picture from beginning to end. He sees the purpose. He sees how events, what reason they might have or place they might fill. And so he has that complete perspective. And we are kind of trying to understand the world looking through a pinhole. And with that pinhole perspective of what's happening in my life and how things are affecting me, we don't see the big picture. We can barely see the picture at all at times. And so he addresses God, who sees it all. And he's at a time when he's kind of seeming to take inventory, and that's why I kind of gravitated to thinking of it as being at one of those landmark birthdays. You know, when you're starting to think about entering into the next decade. It usually gives cause for some reflection, you know, about where I've been, what I've done, where I thought I was going to be and what my expectations were. And what's still left to come? And how long do I have? And what difference will it make? Yeah. I've had people come into my office and I've asked them, what can I help you with or what is on your mind? And their answer is simply, I'm turning 40. And that sort of says it all. I mean, you can pick your decade. They can say it at any decade. But you see, it's those kind of reflective thoughts. So I have no way of presuming, I'm just imagining here, that it was, you know, coming up to Moses' 80th birthday. I don't know. But it might have been. It would have fit the description of the narrative. So he's taking inventory and he's asking, what I've done, does it make a difference? Is it ever going to get better? So let's read the next portion from 3 to 11. So don't return us to the mud. No, this is one of those places where Eugene Peterson, he's an Englishman, probably had much more familiarity with mud than dust. Moses, however, I think had quite a bit more familiarity with dust. But nevertheless, saying back to where you came from, Patience. You've got all the time in the world, whether 1,000 years or a day. It's all the same to you. Are we no more to you than a wispy dream? No more than a blade of grass that springs up gloriously at the rising sun and is cut down without a second thought? Your anger is far and away too much for us. We're at the end of our rope. You keep track of all our sins. Every misdeed since we were children, it's entered in your book. All we can remember is the frown on your face. Is that all we're ever going to get? We live for 70 years or so. With luck, we may make it to 80. Toil and trouble and a marker in the graveyard. Who can make sense of such rage? Such anger against the very ones who fear you. That's the complaint. That's the complaint section of the lament. You see, from his perspective, through his little pinhole, what he sees is only and all God's wrath. And he's expecting the Almighty to lose patience and that he will be so angry that he'll just be disposed of without a thought, like a blade of grass that can wither away in the heat of the day. And the weight of his sins is too much to bear. I very often have opportunity to sit with people who are carrying the guilt and shame of their past life. And believers that are tormented by the evil one, not being able to enjoy the freedom that the grace that washed them clean means that's not who they are anymore. And that they have a fresh start. And they don't necessarily know that. And when they don't know that, they continue to feel like they're sitting on death row and deserving to be. So, never having been able to receive forgiveness, you see, God offers forgiveness, but it is still ours to receive. My grandfather was something of an eccentric man. We get to talk about grandfather stories for quite a while, but one of the things that surprised me as a child that didn't make sense to me was when it was a birthday or a Father's Day for my grandfather and we went over to the house, there would be on what he called the bureau these packages. But they weren't just the packages from this year, they were the packages from several years. All wrapped, never opened, unless they looked like a can of tobacco or another box that looked like it contained a bottle. But the ones that looked like they were probably clothes or other things all stayed wrapped, and he would display and show you all of his presents. And unfortunately, as believers and as Christians, we sometimes have the bureau full of the gifts of God that we've never unwrapped because we've never thought they were really ours. We've never fully claimed and enjoyed them. And that may have been the case to some extent for Moses. You see, to never feel good enough, it's too much to bear. I think how tragic it would be for me and for them if any of my children could only remember my frown. That would be so sad. If they didn't see me as delighting in them and loving them and cherishing them and wanting to see them be all that they can be. To celebrate with them at each step. But you see, we as people tend to anticipate fear. We anticipate what we fear, rather, as I should say. Recently, very recently, I just had the experience with someone very dear to me where they saw me, and you see, you might have noticed I tend to be kind of even. There aren't a lot of things that really, you know, that I seem apparently quite excitable about. And there aren't a lot of things that I really get really distracted by. I kind of stay in this range that looks kind of like a line most of the time. But in looking at me, what was seen was what was feared, that I was angry. It's not an easy thing to convince someone you're not angry when they are pretty sure that's what this expression they saw meant. What we anticipate or what we fear is what we often see. And Moses saw and only saw at this stage in his life, in this season, he saw the wrath and anger of God, the judgment. And so all that he did would never seemingly be enough. And it felt like he was under a constant state of punishment. That was his perspective. And for many people, not feeling like they've received the blessing, the positive regard from their parents or parent, has left them thinking that if the people that they knew on earth as parents couldn't value or love them or accept them as they are, how could a perfect God? You see, life seemed like a hopeless state of punishment. Is that true? No. But it was his perception. You see, our God is a God of love who wants relationships with his children so desperately that he was ready, willing to sacrifice everything to put things right. But that's not the negative picture that the psalmist saw. See, our God is big enough for us to bring our complaints to him. And he understands. Many years ago, when we had 3 preschool children, I needed to do some banking. And I'm not a brave man. I didn't want to take 3 preschoolers into the bank with me. That sort of cowardice had me park right up close to the bank. And so that I could see the bank was a whole glass wall, and I could see the car from the bank, and figured the kids in the car could see Dad in the bank. I explained to the kids, I'm just going in there for a few minutes. You'll be able to see me right there. And I'll be right back. And, well, when I returned, my eldest, who has never suffered silently, had some thoughts to share with me. She had a complaint, a lament, as it were. I could see that she was upset. I opened the car door, and she started just pounding on my chest. Daddy, where were you? Now, I don't know. I suspect she was in her own little world somewhere when I gave all of the explanation and instructions to where I was going to be. But it had missed and eluded her. And what had taken over was fear and rage, anger, that I had left. I'd abandoned her. I think mostly her, but her other younger siblings. And I didn't correct her for the disrespect. I didn't even correct her for the use of force and violence in making her point. What I did do was embrace her and hold her until she stopped shaking and sobbing. Now, the laments are like that. A God who understands that his children don't get it. And he wants and chooses to have us come to him. So, with that in mind, that he was gracious enough to hear him, we don't understand. And we want things to be different. You see, I imagine Moses thought his life was going to be different growing up. And I suspect, you know, even this work in the wilderness, you know, he hadn't necessarily thought of it as a 40-year gig. He might have just been checking in to see how his RSPs were doing. You know, if he was going to have Freedom 85 or not. But it seemed to him like, this is a rage that's never going to end. I'm going to keep being punished. And it seems like God just holds a grudge. And to us, who are his people? It reminded me of one of my favorite lines in the musical Fiddler on the Roof, where in the midst of prayer, many of them confusion and laments. Now, the name of the main character in Fiddler on the Roof is, Tephia. He says, I know, we are your chosen people. But sometimes could you choose somebody else? I think that might have been a little bit of what Moses was feeling here. That it didn't feel so great being the chosen people. And it can seem like this life is also very temporary. Like, how long do we have? What time is left? See, one thing for the believer, the one thing you're never going to run out of is time. You see, this body is temporary, but you were made for all eternity. And we've just begun. You see, what's been so far has just been a brief rehearsal in preparation for something much grander that's to come. But that wasn't where Moses was at. So now, that's the complaint. Let's take a look at what it is that he petitions, what he asks of from God. And so, oh, teach us to live well. Teach us to live wisely and well. Come back, God. How long do we have to wait? And treat your servants with kindness for a change. You see, the edge is still there. It isn't the Western thing that he's going to, by the end of the psalm, going to be all cheered up. He's pretty ticked. And it's still coming through. You know, you could do this, you know, take a chance here. Surprise us with love at daybreak. You know, something different. Then we'll skip and dance all day long. Make up for the bad times with some good times. We've seen enough evil to last a lifetime. The ways you rule and bless your children. And let the loveliness of our Lord, our God, rest on us. Let his favor rest on us. Confirm the work that we do. Oh yes, affirm the work that we do. Oh, I missed a line there, I'm sorry. Let your servants see what you're best at, the ways you rule and bless your children. So, this section gives us a great guideline for how a godly person prays when you can't see where you're going. And so, the indication here is that teach us to live well, to live purposefully, focused, to live with wisdom. And you remember in the conclusions of the book of Ecclesiastes, getting the first thing, getting the main thing, making it the main thing, getting it the first thing, be the first thing, that the relationship we have with the Lord becomes the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of life. So, get your priorities in order. Use your days well. So pray, Lord, help me to do that. Help me to see things your way, not just my way. Help me get your view of life and trust your word rather than just continuing to look through my pinhole. You see, and then to acknowledge God, we can't do this alone, that we are dependent. To ask him to come close and to lead us. You see, we need you. Come close. Be with us, Lord Jesus. So we acknowledge our need. We consider that we're loved. Even if you have a hard time believing it. You see, the best demonstration that God loves you is what he did in and through Jesus. In fact, Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And as you've seen Jesus' willingness to take your place and suffer for you, then you have a glimpse of what his love is and whether he can be trusted during the long winters of the soul. Take time to review what God is willing to do and give him thanks even in the storm. Help us to take notice of where the Lord is at work. Even as we gather together, it's important for us to hear each other's story of where we've seen God at work, what he's doing in lives, and still doing through his Spirit and through his people, his gifts, his care, his protection, his direction, his comfort, his guidance. Ask him to bless you with his favor. That word favor, it's the same idea as we have for his grace. When we have God's favor, his grace. So when we receive his grace, we don't leave it wrapped on the bureau. And then we will pass it along and share his grace with others. Those who enjoy forgiveness and the favor of our Lord have a new outlook. Secure because it doesn't rest on our goodness, but on God's goodness. Ask the Lord to let you join him in his kingdom work. You see, he'll help you find a kingdom purpose that's worth getting up in the morning, that excites you about doing what matters now and forever. You see, we can have a reason to invest our lives in his work and in the lives of others. Then we'll be able to hear that day, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." The lament reminds us that when life seems to all be a mess, when it's hard, when it means a lot of waiting, and the Lord doesn't seem to be doing what you think he would or should, when things don't make sense, he invites you to bring your complaints to him, to keep the conversation going. He cares and understands. Doesn't mean you're going to get over it quickly. God's people have winter seasons in their soul. And sometimes it may seem like a very long and cold winter. Sometimes, and if you've lived here for a while, you know it seems like spring is never coming. The good news is spring is coming. Ask the Lord to help you see things his way. Remember he loves you. Just as he loves you just as you are because of his grace. Ask if you can join him in his kingdom work. That will not take away all the troubles, but it will give you a fresh outlook on life. I can't promise you that you'll see a burning bush like Moses did, nor can I predict how long you may need to wait. Moses had some pretty long waits in his life. But I do believe the Lord will reach out to you in his time. How can I be so sure? I happen to know that he loves you very much. And that it's never and that is never going to change. Because that's just who he is, now and forever. In fact, I know he has plans to come back for you in person, to bring you to be with him forever. Add that to your perspective. Go in peace.